The hour of 10:15 have arrived. We'll call the House Tax Committee to order. Good morning, members. Representative Herr moves the minutes of April 21st. Any discussion, any additions or corrections? All fair say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Herr. Okay, the only item on the agenda we have is a very important item on the agenda. But before we start that, we have our high school pages here, and I want to know where they're from, what their school mascot is, and who their legislator is. Could we just stand up, pages?
Hi, I'm Naomi Salzwedel. I'm from Jordan, Minnesota, and I'm the
Jaguars.
Our representative is Benjamin Baker from 54B.
Hi, I'm Alex McGuire. I'm from Owatonna, where the Husky is. And my representative is Tom Sexton, 19B.
Good morning, Wesley Freebird, 50B, Steve Elkins. Hey, Steve. Yeah. And we're the Jefferson Jaguars. Thanks.
My name is Andrew Peterson. I'm from District 53A. My representative is Mary Clardy, and my mascot is the Crusaders.
I'm Ani Scardo. I'm from Dillsaw High School with the Islanders. I'm 61B, Jamie Long.
Hi, I'm Katie Beath. I'm from District 41B. My representative is Tom DePell, and we're the Hastings Raiders.
I'm Lily. I'm from 15A. My rep is Chris Wadinski, and we're the Tigers.
Well, welcome for the Islander. Are you named the Islanders because you're on an island?
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to straighten that out. Welcome. Welcome to the Tax Committee. Okay, let's start with Chair Joachim. Chair Joachim will move House File 1049. I do believe, and you have all the runs there and everything, 1049. And then we have a DE2, and we have a A1. Where would you like to go? And then Chair Kreisha, who'd like to start?
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just getting organized, I believe. I will move the DE before the committee.
So the D, where is it here? The DE2?
Yes, please.
Okay, could you please, this is kind of a, usually we just put them on, but this is a little bit of a bigger one. Could you please explain what you're doing here?
Yes, we'll do the opening and then discussion. I just have to get to my right page. Not very organized today, Mr. Chair, sorry. Okay, so House File 1049 is a vehicle bill, so we're here to discuss tax interactions, but I'll give you a quick rundown of Ed Finance. And I'll talk about the policy, the finance provisions, and Chair Kreisha will talk about the policy provisions real quick. So we had a target of $40 million in the first biennium dedicated to the READ Act and a zero target in the TAILS. While we made great progress in 23-24 session in both finance and policy, there's still more to do for the growing needs of our school districts, teachers, and students. I would like to thank the leadership team for a positive target for the READ Act, but a zero target in the TAILS did not allow us to provide any increase in investment in our schools. What we were able to do with this bill is provide some flexibility in funding streams that the districts have been asking for, while protecting the integrity of what the funding streams were intended to be used for. While this is not the bill I would have written myself and what Chair Kreisha may have written alone, it reflects a compromise that a dynamic of a tied Senate, tied House required for us to fund our schools. I'm happy that we were able to protect some of the major provisions we put in place last session, and we kept the policy changes to a minimum. And two of the areas I'm really proud of protecting were linking the general formula to inflation and universal meals. Funding streams that we made adjustments to, we were able to fill out the funding, the unemployment insurance for our hourly workers for the coming summer. That was Representative Ream's bill. And provided ongoing flexible funding and a basic supplemental aid that districts can use to cover those costs forward with Representative Bakeberg's bill. But my biggest disappointment is having to make an agreement to remove unemployment insurance after the summer of 28. The hourly workers in our schools play a pivotal role in our students' education and deserve the same benefits as other hourly workers across the state. It is my hope that we can find a way to retain unemployment aid for our school hourly workers. We were able to maintain the intended use fund for our funds for student support personnel aid for our licensed social workers, school social workers, counselors, nurses, and psychologists, We did have to slow down the growth in a per pupil as it moves forward. All of us have been concerned about how our state dollars are being used, and we wanted to rethink legislatively appointed grants. Most of the grants we have in the K-12 arena are one-time funds, but there are a few that have been base funding that were legislatively appointed versus competitive grant process. Those grants are the Center for the Book, Starbase, Blackman Teach, the Teachers of Color and Indigenous Teachers Administration, and the Sane Foundation. We were able to keep the grant funding in the first biennium and then remove funds from the base in the second. The exception was the Sane Foundation that keeps steady funding in 26 and cuts grants in half in 27 and then removes the base in the second biennium like the other grants. It is my hope that next year together we can figure out a process in which a nonprofit and a school district can apply to MDE through a competitive grant process. While we do not have the funds to provide MDE, Palsby, BOSA, and state academies or Purpich with their ongoing adjustment, we're able to keep the funding, their base funding as is, and we're also able to fund MDE's litigation costs at the $4 million instead of their $6 million requested. You may see on the spreadsheet the other investments, the READ Act, $40 million that goes out to the schools with Representative Clardy's bill and Representative Mueller's language and very flexible use. We funded a task force to look at compensatory aid with Representative Feist. There are other investments you'll see on the spreadsheet. We also captured $2 million of MDE funds that would have been canceled back to the general fund. We add this is the portion that you'll be interested in because it affects taxes. We add fixing a school roof as a use for long-term facilities maintenance levies with Representative Vernig. If you think of long-term facilities maintenance, basically you take a school building and tip it upside down, everything that falls out is funded a different way. Everything that's left is funded with LTFM. Currently, our larger school districts can use their LTFM dollars toward roof maintenance, but there are about 300 other school districts across the state that cannot. You'll see the cost of this addition on line 39 of your house change item spreadsheet, and nonpartisan staff, Sylvie Breckel, is here to explain the levy interaction that you will see on the property tax levy sheet. Basically, we pay for the equalization. We made some reductions and reallocations in order to create the basic supplemental aid for our school district. This is a per pupil funding stream that districts will receive that is as flexible as general ed funds. In order to create this funding stream, we slowed the growth in student support aid. We reallocated the library funds into the basic supplemental aid account, and we slightly reduced the 100% reimbursement for transportation costs. I now will turn it over to Chair Kreese to explain any of the policy changes, but first I just want to thank him for his willingness to negotiate, even though it took us a little bit longer, and thank all of our staff for the incredible job that we did.
Chair Kreese.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm wondering if Ms. Parra can come up and help me with the policy side. I don't want to miss the many, many things we have in there. Even though it's not a lot, it's very important.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Christina Parra from House Research. The two main policy items in the bill relate to the expiration of the between terms provision for unemployment insurance for K-12 hourly employees starting in 2028, after the 2028 summer. And then the READ Act. There's a number of provisions in Article 11 in the READ Act. Modifying definitions, particularly definitions, adding the science of reading to the definitions of things like evidence-based and structured literacy, and clarifying that districts are required to provide instruction in accordance with the science of reading. Terminating the partnership between the University of Minnesota's CARI, which is the Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement between CARI and the Department of Education, so making the Department of Education responsible for continuing to implement various requirements under the READ Act without CARI. New provisions relating to dual language immersion programs so that those programs would not be required to comply with the READ Act except when they're providing instruction in foundational reading skills in English and exempting them from certain other requirements under the READ Act. Requirements relating to how candidates for teacher licensure would demonstrate that they can teach the science of reading. those are the main requirements for the READ Act. There are other policy changes relating to the Minnesota Math Corps and requiring evidence-based instruction. And Mr. Chair, those are the main policy provisions in the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Pera. Chair Kreisha.
Thank you. And so thank you, members. And as you heard from both Chair Joachim and Ms. Pera, lighter on the policy in volume, but a lot of implications. So let me start with my opening remarks. First of all, I must tell you, while the negotiations and the conversations went on and were long, they were beneficial. And I've said this in committee, and I'll say it here again. Chair Joachim is one of the most knowledgeable people when it comes to these areas. Her background as the former property tax chair, education policy chair, and now into education finance, an amazing ability to listen and process and synthesize information, which led us to really looking at the flexibility side and understanding what schools are trying to accomplish. We're in an imperfect world of trying to negotiate a very complicated education finance bill. And it's the formula that has always been pushed and probed and prodded from different angles as people try to solve things by restrictive funds or locking down how things are handled. And while there's discussion around the UI, I'll say it from this side. That is an imperfect solution of trying to figure out how schools and workers can work together. I don't think there's anybody that I've talked to in the schools that does not understand the importance of certainty in a time right now and where financial security is important. However, the way the UI was put into schools was an imperfect situation that applied to UI rules in general. School workers could apply to that before, however, they were denied because they were not considered unemployed. This mandate changed that. So what happens is we end up with a situation where we're not really getting it right. Some people are, some people aren't, and it's creating this gray area. So what I think actually happened here is an opportunity for schools to use more flexible funding to have those conversations. My position would be that UI is best when it's not used, when people have jobs and they have that going into the summer and they have that security. When under the UI situation before where the dollars were there, the school district would reimburse dollars that were just sent away. What we have now with the basic supplemental aid, and I would challenge you to think about this, rather than have an employee that is trying to meet the criteria, looking for jobs, maybe they the job that's offered to them in the summer is not exactly lining up, but they find a way to work with the school and the school extends that job through the summers, taps into their basic supplemental aid, and that employee never files UI. Those dollars are 100% kept in the school district and used for students and other summertime programs. My vision is not that we fight against UI, but that we give the opportunity for employees not to file for it in the beginning. Let's not set them up where they feel like they're against the school, where they're trying to do this in a way that doesn't help them through the summer. Now, I understand that's not perfect. I understand there are scenarios where schools or employees may not fit in a job description, or there may be scenarios where they still qualify, and that is still there. The dollars are there. Those are still paid for. So that's the side that I see on this, is trying to remove UI and reduce it so that we give longer employee, we give better opportunities to the hourly workers. I don't know how schools are going to work with that. I'm hoping they're going to see that as an opportunity. We give them a four-year runway to figure that out, and we extend that possibility to schools. But we don't figure it out for them here. We let them come to the table, and we let them have that conversation.
Chair Joachim.
Mr. Chair, just one brief comment on that, maybe a clarification. Until 2023, our hourly workers in our schools were not allowed to apply for UI. They did not. They were not allowed. They were axed out of the system. They're the only employees in the state that work more than 3 months that weren't allowed to apply for unemployment aid. So, as I said, that's the one regret that I have about closing this deal. Otherwise, I'm really happy about the work that Chair Kreisch and I did together. One of those examples about flexibility that we were talking about, because sometimes we don't always get it right here. Our student support professional aid, that was meant to get more counselors, psychologists, school nurses into our classrooms and social workers. And I had talked, when we put the fund together, I had talked to the Minnesota Rural Educators Association and tried to figure out what base would work for small schools, because you don't want to give folks money when they can't even get a full-time equivalent in there. So I was told like the lowest would be $40,000. So we set a $40,000 base and then did a per pupil amount on top of that. And that per pupil amount, we jumped it a little high in the second biennium, which is right now, so we're just slowing that down. But that per pupil amount or whatever's greater. So it would be the $40,000 base or per pupil amount, whichever's greater, and the districts could decide. That still quite wasn't enough, and we had put a little too many restrictions around that on how they had to hire somebody new, they couldn't use it to hire somebody back or fill out another contract. So once we started hearing those things as the bill progressed in money started going out in 2024, end of 2024, we started talking to the advocates that have worked on this. And that's the school district, and I won't name all the alphabet soup that we have for our school districts. So let's just say there is somebody up at this Capitol that talks for every part of the people that work in our schools. And then the folks that were the counselors, the psychologists, those folks came in, I got them in a room together, and they talked about what flexibility they could all agree on. And that is what you see on this bill. We gave them the flexibility that we need. And I think that's really how we should be doing policy up here and finances. We try something, and if it doesn't work, we shouldn't be ashamed. We should be okay with then going back and tweaking it to make sure it's working and being implemented the way we want it to be. So that was a lot of discussions that we had.
Chair Kreisha.
And thank you. And I hope, members, you're going to hear more respect and agreement between our conversations than anything else. What Chair Joachim just said there is absolutely spot on. I will call this out. In our conversations and the many, many times we've done this, I think that we've elevated the schools, the workers, and the work they do more than we have done anything. When you look at the student support personnel and you look at that alone, we recognize a couple things. They're immensely important. And we also recognize not taking it away from them. So what we did with the flexibility was not say, hey, you know, if you need to continue to look down the student support and look at the boundaries we put on that, please hire those people. But if within that you have other needs, and there was a point when we were talking where, and I greatly appreciate this, Chair Joachim called out and said, hey, there's some schools that have declining enrollment and some floors. Let's not miss them. And it was understanding that whole picture of this. So she's absolutely right, and I was happy to negotiate with that flexibility piece as well, because I think what we did was gave a lot of yes ands versus no, you can't do that. We were trying to help schools as they look at very uncertain times ahead of them.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Chair Joachim.
I didn't know if you wanted Ms. Beckel up to go through their spreadsheet, but there's one other thing I would add to the unemployment insurance for our hourly workers. It looks different in every school district because not all school districts provide summer school, so they don't have that ability to give that employment. I represent three school districts. My one school district where I live does the summer school for the school districts around it, so their cost looks different than other costs. And just as a reminder, too, none of your districts have had to pay for unemployment. The fund has covered it so far. And that's why I'm hoping we can continue those discussions about keeping that provision. But I didn't know if you wanted Ms. Beckel to come up and go over the spreadsheet or not.
I'd like to kind of keep it focused on the tax area.
Yep, she can talk about that.
Okay.
Because she probably will do a little bit better than I will.
Please state your name and who represents for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. If you turn to the property tax levy tracking spreadsheet, I will just point out basically two different lines. So the first line is line two, the basic supplemental levy. And I am highlighting this one not because there is a property tax change, but because there is a name change to an item that does have a formula that involves levies. So this used to be called local optional levy, or local optional revenue was the full revenue source. This bill changes the name to basic supplemental revenue, so that's why this says basic supplemental levy now. And originally, this was made up of two tiers. Now, under this bill, it will be made up of three tiers, but the first tier now is comprised of all aid. So that's why you see zeros in the change columns, the columns that are labeled House versus current law. So that's one slightly related item. And then the next item is on line 25 of that levy tracking spreadsheet, long-term facilities equalized levy. So the long-term facilities maintenance revenue, that is an equalized levy. And if you want to look at the bill, that's in Article 6, Sections 1 through 4. And this basically was the roof repair and replacement provision of the bill, allowing schools to include roof repair and replacement in their 10-year facilities plan. So this could have had levy impacts for districts, but in the bill, in Section 3, the bill increases the equalizing factor from 123% to 127% and puts all of that increase into state aid. And if you look at the state aid tracking spreadsheet, it's on page 2. Line 39, you can see that those costs that could have been put on the levies, but again was paid for entirely out of state aid, were $9.6 million in fiscal years 28 and 29 only. And those are the only property tax interactions, say, in the bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Before members will have adequate time for questions here, but does the Department of Revenue wish to comment on this bill? Okay, thank you. Any public testimony? I don't have a list of anyone, but we want to certainly make sure people are heard. Okay, let's go to, we'll go to questions from members, then we'll have Chair Gomez kind of wrap things up as she wishes, and then we'll be acting on the amendments, but then we will be laying the bill over. So let's go to questions from members. Okay, let's go to Chair Gomez. Well, Chair Gomez, what if we did the amendments first and then you can wrap it up? Yep. Is that okay?
Yeah, that would be good.
Okay, so Chair, the education co-chair will move the H1049DE2 amendment, correct, Chair Joachim?
Yes.
Okay. So any discussion to the amendment to get the bill? This is basically the bill. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Item next, we have another amendment. And whose amendment is this one? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. So this morning I'm offering the A1 because, as you heard Chair Joachim say, ESPs are essential for student success. The A1 removes the repeal of unemployment that would have happened after the summer of 2028 as drafted in the DE that we just adopted. Since this is not the Education Finance Committee, I'll provide a little overview on how ESPs support student success. For one, they drive our students safely to school. They prepare breakfast and lunch so that they can learn. And in some cases, they are the difference between life and death for students with special needs. Because of this, this is why we cannot leave our ESPs behind. I also know personally very well because my mom has been an hourly ESP for more than 30 years at her elementary school. So this morning, I'm offering the amendment for her and on behalf of all of her colleagues. Today, because of her tenure, my mother finally makes a living wage, but my siblings and I had to rely on reduced price school lunch because she did not get a living wage while we were growing up. And so for me, I know how important UI is for hourly workers. Some summers she would be offered to work in summer schools, and other summers that was not an option. And so because of this, I think this is why many members of the Education Finance Committee and our caucus is fighting so hard to keep it. In the 30 years that my mom worked at her elementary school, she saw her students grow up and send their kids back to learn at the same place. During that time, she also made home visits, found clothing, backpacks, jackets, and whatever else needed for her students. And in some cases, because of her relationship with her students, she mentored a group of siblings who lost their mother and, you know, made sure that they, you know, got the essential mom clothes that their birth mom would never give them. On a larger scale, she grew the school plant sale into its annual fundraiser and has curated so many other school-wide events for the community there and for all of her students. And so this is just one example of how essential ESPs are to student success, and I want to make sure that we keep this in mind when we consider the amendment today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Lee moves the H1049A1 amendment. Further discussion for members, and we'll go to authors here. Representative Gomez, Chair Gomez.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much to Representative Lee for bringing this bill forward. So what we know is that across the state of Minnesota, in every school, in every single one of our districts, hourly school workers are like the people who fill in all of the gaps, who are on the front lines, who make education possible in our buildings. You know, Representative Lee talked about some of those roles that they play, whether it's, you know, working directly with students with disabilities. You know, I remember in, I went to South High School in Minneapolis. It was 2,000 kids went there. One of my ESPs actually later became a park board commissioner and is a longtime community member, Londell French. And I mean, they were the people in the halls. They were breaking up fights. They were people who were building really strong relationships with the kids who weren't always in the classrooms, right? With some of the kids who would fall out into the hallways or onto the sidewalks outside of the schools. And sometimes those were the young people who needed the most, you know, needed an adult to step up and to be with them. And what we know is that, you know, our young people increasingly, especially now, are dealing with so much. You know, I'm sure that in the education committees that you talk a lot about student mental health, and, you know, the people who make up the ESPs are like nurses are in hospitals. ESPs are in schools. They make up the fabric of our schools. And I find it really hard to accept that we're sending this back to the schools for more conversation, to talk more about it. Because talk to any school and ask them about their hourly school workers. They are precious and valued members of the staff. And if there was a way for them to go talk about it and figure it out, they would have done it in the last several decades. Because it is just evident. These are the only workers in our state who work more than 3 months and do not have access to basic unemployment insurance, which is for all workers. The idea that we would send this back for more talk when we finally, after decades, actually took action to make sure that these critical members of our school community can, like, feed their own kids. Almost every ESP has a second or third job. That is the reality. ESPs make personal sacrifices to work in our system that underpays them. They almost all have a weekend job. Former Park Board Commissioner Londell French was a bouncer on the weekends. And what he always said was, like, his skills that he had to use with some of his kids during the day were some of the same skills that he had to use at night when he was a bouncer at a bar. But imagine that, right? He's out working till 1 or 2 a.m. and then coming in, and school started at 7:15. I hope it doesn't for high school kids anymore. It's a really bad time to go to school when you're 15. But, you know, we finally, after decades of excluding these critical educators from the basic labor protections that every other worker in our state enjoys, we finally did that in 2023. And now we're saying, we're going to take it away. go back and talk more about it. That's going to solve it. I hope that members will think about the people in your district. These workers also are your constituents. These hourly school workers are your constituents in every district across the state. And so I hope you think of them when you think about how to vote on this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Authors? Or we'll go to the authors and then let the author wrap up. Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lee, for bringing this amendment. Thank you, Representative Gomez, for your comments. These are the folks I'm sure, I'm glad there's students here today, because I'm sure every single one of them has a story about either a paraprofessional or a custodian or the clerk in the front office or the hourly para that's in the health center. All the folks, our nutrition staff, our bus drivers, those are all the hourly workers we're talking about. A lot of you guys don't know my background. I started out as an advocate for early childhood and family education, ended up as a Senate staffer, and then when I got lucky enough to be elected, I had to give up that other job. My husband's a teacher, and I had to find another side hustle. And since education had been a passion of mine for a long time, I decided, and I almost went into special ed before I became a Senate staffer, I decided to work as a para in our schools. Started out at the high school, way out of my comfort zone. I liked the littles, but I was probably that para some of you might have been annoyed at. I'm looking at the students that was in the hallway, getting folks to their classes, lunchroom, study hall. That's where I got my CPI training, crisis prevention intervention, which is about 80% de-escalation verbally. As Chair Gomez says, you use it many other jobs. I have used it here on the floor. Can't do the holds anymore. My knee won't let me. But I've worked with early childhood as a special ed para, and more frequently I've worked in our elementary schools as a special ed for kiddos with special needs, and usually the ones that are a lot of behavioral. It seems to be my jam, and it was very, because of all this, and I'm saying this because I'm very proud of the districts I've worked in, and one of them was St. Louis Park. And during COVID, when they were desperately trying to find jobs for their hourly workers to do, they didn't have enough jobs for that. I didn't sub during that time because I knew my colleagues I had met there for 2 years at Aquila needed the work even more than me. And that's when that school board found out that hourly workers didn't qualify for unemployment. So they called them into their office one by one and said, we want to make sure you're taken care of. So do you want us to try to find you a job delivering meals on the bus, working with kids online, or would you like us to fire you so that you could collect unemployment? Because that was the only way they could. So this is really personal to me and was a really hard decision to do this. I don't know if I can go back and sub now after this, walk in a building and see the folks that we're taking this away from. So I just wanted to add that personal story. And I know everything else in the bill I love. And I want to go into conference committee and fight for it alongside of Chair Carisha, because I think we'll make a formidable team with our partisan staff. But with this in it, it makes it very hard. So thank you for indulging me, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Carisha. Any final comments before we go to the author of the amendment?
Yes, so thank you, Mr. Chair. And we all have a story. When I first started teaching, I taught English for 2 hours a day, at which time I went home and I gave my wife a little bit of a break with our new child, and then I came back as a custodian. After 1 o'clock, after I had done my custodial duties, I was a special ed para for the rest of the day, at which time I went down to the locker room, changed my clothes, and coached track, came home, gave my wife another break from our child, and then I was driving to Marshall to be a sports writer at Marshall Independent. In the summers, I would help on the farms for many of the students that I worked with, helping them in there. We were rock picking, we were planting, we were harvesting, we were throwing hay, and I was side by side with the very students I was working with. During those conversations, I would have members come to me that were part of the union for the special ed and say, why are you doing that? You can't be working in these farms with these students. I said, hey, I'm just trying to put diapers on my kid. This is also very personal for me. I had a superintendent who believed in me and who was able to offer me those jobs, rather than try to find ways for me not to work and do other things. Members, I appreciate the comments from Chair Gomez, and maybe I was imprecise in my comments about the conversation. It's not a conversation about the policy. We're always one conversation away from fixing things and resolving things. It's a conversation that we allow the schools to have with their workers, because it doesn't always work to let them go. It doesn't always work to give them jobs. It doesn't always work to find new jobs. But we don't know that. And what I love about this bill, while people can have some heartburn, and I understand it, is we have a four-year runway for schools to try to work with their employees to find better opportunities for them in the summer work. It's not taken away right now. The governor wanted to do 1 year. We kept that 1 year of $30 million in there, but then we put over $30 million in the first year for basic supplement. That's completely flexible. So for the 4 years of runway right now, the schools still have the money to pay for this. If the result of a conversation is that we're going to UI, the schools will still pay for that. In fact, there was an article, I believe it was in either the MinnPost or Minnesota Reformer, where a member said, our intention was never to pay for this. I won't call that member out by name. So what I understood was the intention was the schools were just going to have to absorb this. We're trying, on my side, trying not to get to that. We're trying to allow the school districts to extend these employment opportunities, not employment, unemployment benefits. I think that's a win-win. Are we going to be perfect? No. But when a superintendent or the management is able to sit down with workers and say, hey, this is what we have in front of you to help you get to what you have in front of you as far as whatever the summer may be, I think that's an opportunity for a conversation. So if I was imprecise on how I couched that, I apologize. The policy is here. We're setting the rules for that. And I think that, and I know there's school groups here, I hope those school groups see what's in front of them, which is an opportunity to work with your employees. They've all said to us, this is the salt of the earth. We are the salt of the earth. We've been in those positions. I dropped the mic. I'm sorry.
No. Okay, let's go to the author of the H104981 amendment. Representative Lee moves that amendment.
Great, thank you, Chair. And because I didn't have Rep. Kim Hicks here, I'd like to request a roll call vote for the amendment at this time.
A roll call has been requested. Any further discussion?
Yeah, I would just close by, reiterating.
Definitely.
Thank you, Chair. I just close by reiterating, what Chair Gomez said. A 4 year runway is not enough when this is something that school districts have been wrestling with for. The last 30 or 150 years, which is how long my school district has been in existence. And so, this is why we're offering the A1. So thank you.
And thank you. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Davids.
No.
Davids, no. Chair Gomez.
Aye.
Chair Gomez, aye. Vice Chair Joy.
No.
Vice Chair Joy, nay. Vice Chair Norris.
Aye.
Vice Chair Norris, aye. Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Anderson, no. Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Elkins, aye. Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, yes. Representative Hansen.
Yes.
Representative Hansen, yes. Representative Harder.
No.
Representative Harder, no. Representative Herr.
Yes.
Representative Herr, yes. Representative Hewitt.
Yes.
Representative Hewitt, yes. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Johnson, no. Representative Kozlowski.
Yes.
Representative Kozlowski, yes. Representative Lee.
Yes.
Representative Lee, yes. Representative Roach.
No.
Representative Roach, no. Representative Robbins.
No.
Representative Robbins, no. Representative Schwartz.
No.
Representative Schwartz, no. Representative Smith.
Yes.
Representative Smith, yes. Representative Stevenson.
Yes.
Representative Stevenson, yes. Representative Swedinsky.
No.
Representative Swedinsky, no. Representative Weirwas.
No.
Representative Weerwas, no. Representative Weiner?
No.
Representative Weiner, no. Representative Witte?
No.
Representative Witte, no. Representative Joachim?
Yes.
Representative Joachim, yes. With 12 ayes and 12 nays, the result is...
Okay, thank you. With 12 ayes and 12 nays, the A1 amendment does not prevail. So members, we now have House File 1049 as amended before us. We will lay the bill over.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, can we do a wrap-up?
Just 2 seconds for wrap-up.
Certainly.
Go ahead.
So I would just say this. Members, what you have in front of you now... this was the parameters we were given to by leadership. Remember that. This is the agreement. We were told three things. You had a $40 million target, and the READ Act was for that. We had a zero target overall, and we had a 2028 repeal for the UI. That was given to us by both of our leaderships. That date was not something that we walked about. That was what was handed to us for negotiations. So what you have is... the agreement that follows those parameters as was handed to us. And so I'm asking for your support. I know we're laying this over, but we'll be taking this into conference where we have a whole nother set of conversations. And again, I can't say enough thank yous about Chair Joachim, Vice Chair Sydney Jordan, and the staff that we worked with. Just very professional and respectful.
Thank you, Chair Creation. Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and a lot of what we're talking about in the Tax Committee for this and that long-term facilities maintenance, but also UI, is equalizing a levy. Although I was the property tax chair at one time, I am the education finance co-chair now, and I can't raise taxes in our committee. So whenever we tap into a levy, which quite a few of the 14 categoricals on the special education on the education formula have, that's a levy that's imposed on taxpayers, not just the ones that you all see at the ballot box, but there's about 30 other ones districts can do. We can't raise those or change those without offsetting that levy in the tails. I would be remiss if I didn't beg you all to start looking at what we're now calling the basic supplemental aid. The two other tiers are levies. Those need to really be rebased. They're at 2013 numbers. It's really hurting our property poor district and costing us more money because we're having to put more money in aid. So when we equalize a levy for property poor district, if, let's say, Edina went out for a levy and wanted to tax their payers $1 per student, they would only have, their taxpayers would only have to pay 50 cents. But if Lionel Lakes went out for $1, their taxpayers might have to pay $1.50. We equalize that with aid to try to make it so that it shouldn't matter what zip code a child lives in, how well they're educated. That's what you see in the spreadsheet when you look at the long-term facilities maintenance. Now, with UI, one of the reasons why the districts do have a UI levy, we did not tap into that first year because we had conflicting fiscal notes flying around and how many people might take it because it's a brand new program. Districts said they thought 100% of their employees would. The fiscal notes said deed said 50%. We wanted to track it for a few years. So the first year, only 27% took it. Now we're up to almost 40%. But we didn't want to lock up money in offsetting a levy and letting them tap into that until we saw a trajectory to figure out how much we should be putting there. That is why we didn't do that to begin with. I think our conversation here would be much different if we would have let them do that right away. I don't think the districts would be asking to repeal that. And in fact, Association of Metropolitan School District did come forward with a bill this year to be able to allow them to tap into the UI levy, but we don't have a target. So I implore you to think about this when we get to the floor. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. House File 1049, as amended, will really be laid over this time. So just for the record. Future meetings, Chair Gomez, any thoughts?
Mr. Chair, hopefully not till you and I have a bill to hear.
And it'll be a fine piece of legislation.
Fine piece of legislation.
Piece. Yes, it will be.
So call the chair.
Okay, so look at your emails, and we will be notifying you as soon as we know something as far as this committee getting back together. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.